Hey, After Buzzers, welcome to the Sharp Objects After Show. We are talking about episode one, Vanish. This episode was all about hog killers, mommy issues, and a whole lot of small town murder mysteries. You want to stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, I wish I could play guitar like Led Zeppelin. That is an awesome song we had in this episode tonight. Vanished. This is the Sharp Objects After Show. I'm Leslie Powers, joined by my lovely panel here. Go ahead and introduce yourselves, ladies.
Hey, guys. I'm Carolina Benetti.
Hi, guys. I'm Heather Geisler.
Guys, we are going to dive right into this crazy goth southern jamming mystery. Also, later on, you want to stay tuned because we have an awesome special segment called The Feminist Chronicles, and we're going to highlight a female journalist who has done something awesome in the past or in present day. We also have some awesome gossip coming up about Amy Adams and her new project, so you want to stay tuned for that.
Yes.
Ladies, I am dying to get your initial thoughts. This is a brand new mini-series by the people that brought us Big Little Lies, so we love them already.
Yes. Love, love, love.
But I would love to hear some initial, just grandiose thoughts.
Chills. I literally just got chills as I was even thinking about answering that. That was my little shake before. It was not a dramatic pause. My body was like, and you shall have chills.
Yes. About everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was so good. And then obviously the music was really great in it.
There really was
just so many like fast cuts. And it was like, what's happening next?
So good.
Yes. So good. I loved it instantly. It's so dark.
Yeah.
And I hate to go there sometimes in my brain because I'm also on the Handmaid's Tale After Show. So it's like nonstop darkness.
But this was
female
like a
darkness.
Lighter darkness. I didn't feel like repressed and like I should go drink a gallon of whiskey while I cry into my bathtub for my human rights to be stripped
away.
But then you would be like our lead character, which we will absolutely get to. So like I mentioned, this
is my inspiration
to go lay in a bathtub and drink lots of whiskey. Please do not do that. Call me if you need anything.
There was a health number at the end of the episode. So.
Yes,
it's okay. I have you guys.
There is. HBO is being very responsible. And saying,
I didn't notice that. There was a health number? That's wonderful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anybody suffering from any sort of alcoholism or self-harm or anything like that. HBO is being very responsible. So like I said earlier, this is the team that brought us Big Little Lies. We have Jean-Marc Vallée as the director. We do have a new showrunner, Marty Noxon, who also is the showrunner of Unreal. Everybody who has watched that in Dietland, she's wonderful. So I just want to talk to you girls because I know, Heather, you've read the book by Gillian Flynn.
I've read all of Gillian Flynn's books. I'm a huge fan of her. Obviously, she's probably best known for Gone Girl. Also, another fabulous book. So I definitely expected to have that same kind of tone. Sure. Lots of mystery, lots of secrets. Very,
and we got that.
Yes, very in-depth characters. So yeah.
And how does this, even though it was only one episode, how does it compare?
So I was definitely having some flashbacks. And I will say that I read the book when it first came out, and I didn't really want to spoil the
show. How long ago was that?
Oh, gosh.
It was before Gone Girl, right?
It was... I don't remember. I'd have to look it up.
Years, right?
But
just for anyone who hasn't read the book know the like time range between the... Because I'm assuming it was a national bestseller?
Yes, but I think maybe even after Gone Girl was, because people probably went and
found out about it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how I started reading all of her books. I read Gone Girl and was obsessed and was like, I have to read all of these books from this author. So
very cool.
Yeah, so definitely recommend that. I also love crime in general. I'm a crime enthusiast.
It's a hot thing right now.
So
crime.
Very excited to be on this panel.
Well, we're excited to have you. And Carolina, I know that you are a big fan of the director.
Yes.
As am I. So his style obviously came through a lot with this, as you see with Big Little Lies, too. It's very similar. But what did you think about Jean-Marc Vallée?
He's such an immersive storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And
agreed.
Within his stories, I feel like I can see, like, just like nuances of other directors' styles. Like I felt a little bit at the very beginning when we opened in and we dove into the little girls and how they were running in through the town and Amy was sleeping and they went in. And that to me, the eeriness of it all reminded me of Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, absolutely.
So I was feeling like moments of The Shining, because The Shining's a horror movie, but it isn't.
It is really like a psychological think piece. And I felt like he opened it that way. The colder, but like slightly warmer color palette. It reminded me of like a 1960s Polaroid.
Yes. Oh, that's a really good way of putting it. That's a filter on your Instagram. The sharp objects filter. We're talking about it right now. Yeah, I love it. Yes, let's patent it.
Yeah, it like really reminded me almost as if he brought to life a Polaroid picture that someone had been staring at, and it had like nuances of Kubrick, and I loved it. I really hope that we can get him in here to chat with us because I'd love to pick his brain about like what he drew from, because a lot of times directors, like, sure, they'll get a script and they'll get a story, but they'll draw from folk tales or like old towns or a photograph or even a magazine, and you won't know about it until you've had the chance to sit and chat with them.
So Jean-Marc Vallée, this is our call to you.
Yes, come join Jean-Marc, us. Please.
We would love to talk to you. And I completely agree. I think the style is very apparent. I think he has, after Big Little Lies and Wild and Dallas Buyers Club, which he's also directed, I think they all now are blending for me. Like, his style is very apparent.
I love that. And I love that. It focuses consistent. On real people.
Yes. Yes. It's and he also focuses really on the kind of the ugly of these people because you have people like Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon, and it's like the beauty is insane. But I think he gets to the like core darkness of them. Really, he does that really well. So
definitely.
I think the style is great. Even the credits. I thought the credits were, like, super whimsical.
I wanted to just stay and jam out to the ending song, and you were like, we do have to get to the preview.
Yeah. I was like, sorry, guys. I have to know what's going to happen next week. Let's dive into the show. So we open on kind of a flashback. So the way the show has gone this episode, and I'm assuming that's the style is going to stay the same, is that we do a lot of flashbacks. So we start off in 1992. And that's only told to us really through a campaign poster for Bill Clinton. And I was like, that's really clever.
Clinton Gore.
Yes. 92.
But then they let us know that we're in present day when they show us the Obama poster. Well, slightly present day.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah, when the little girls run up and they go through the house, they pass an Obama campaign poster.
I think that's very cool that that's the way they told. Sometimes they're like, it's 1992. And we're like, can you just tell that storyteller way?
Down and I was like, set in early Obama 90s, poster? Maybe not with like little dots.
But
it's still figured it out. When she goes back into Wind Gap, it's like we're stepping back in time, though.
Yes.
It is.
We've all been to those towns where it's like, we're in that bar and it's like, this is like the 80s and nothing has changed. And I think that's what we end up getting from Wind Gap. So, yes, we start in 1992, and then we're immediately in the future. So it's immediately interweaved from this young girl who has red hair, and we don't really know who she is or what she means
for the
yet.
Redheads.
Ginger ambition.
Love it. And then we meet Amy Adams' character, Camille. So what did you guys think right off the bat? We didn't really get much of her dialogue-wise, but what did we think of Camille's character right off the bat?
Well, obviously an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing we learn about her. She definitely seems reserved, which is interesting since she's a journalist and she has to be very social in finding out what's going on.
But see, I agree to disagree. I wasn't surprised at her reserved character, especially when they introduce you to her family. Everything starts to make sense. Ooh, I mean, she grew up in a family where they still have an African-American maid. Hello, are we living in the Help for real in the 1950s and 60s?
Very true.
And then, you know, her mother is very much like, I don't understand why a girl like you would just want to speak about such subjects. Her mother is very much like the kept woman who runs the house and plans a menu as if we're living in a southern plantation.
And pulls out her eyelashes?
Yeah. And
I think she was pulling off fake eyelashes. But we'll get to Adora. Let's stick with Camille for now. We'll get to her.
Camille is that her mother truly informs that even though she's left and she's obviously made a life for herself in, you know, the big city that is St. Louis, she comes from such a structured background. Mm-hmm. There's only so much willfulness mm-hmm. that can come out of someone. And they say that she moved away years ago, but how many years? A decade, 5 years, 7 years? Like, I have questions.
I mean, she seems mid-30s, so she seems, but she's drinking a lot. Yeah. So that's, like Heather said, that's what we first learn about her, is that she's got these little mini bottles mm-hmm. of alcohol. Mm-hmm. She's packing them all up because her boss has sent her on this job back in her hometown.
Yeah.
And I get the sense from her boss, Curry, that he thinks this is going to be therapeutic mm-hmm. for her. Did you guys get that from him, that he's sending her almost on like a self-discovery totally. Journey? Yeah.
His wife calls him on it. Like, this dude needs to, like, reel back and stop trying to tell people.
He's getting
people
too personal.
Yeah.
Dr. Phil, all the way.
Buddy, yes, just because you watch Dr. Phil doesn't mean you are a doctor.
But it does make me feel like she has, you know, maybe he's a paternal figure in her life. Because clearly her family is not normal.
Yes.
And, you know, she hasn't seen her mother or in months or however long it
she
was.
She said months, I think. Yeah.
But it mm-hmm. seems like they don't have too close of a relationship. So maybe this is, you know, kind of her family away from home. Clearly they're close. They work together. So to me, it felt kind of like a fatherly figure.
Yeah,
so I think
true.
He's looking out for her.
He is. And he gives her this assignment because there was a girl in her hometown who was murdered a few months ago. He says in August. So mm-hmm. we assume it's a few months ago. And then there's a more current case happening where there's a missing girl.
Right. Anne Nash.
And so he thinks that this will be because it's personal, because it's her hometown, mm-hmm. even though she's kind of like, I don't like to associate myself with Wind Gap. That's not mm-hmm. like her style. But still, he thinks that it would make a better story if it's told by somebody that's from the town. So there she goes to Wind Gap with all of her alcohol in tow.
Which you could hear clinking in its own duffel bag.
And then she, did you notice when she opened her trunk, there was like an empty whiskey bottle? And I was just like, how is she just sitting in her car drinking?
Everybody in town drinks whiskey. That's what everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The cop, the bartender. And I love that Maker's Mark is their top shelf.
I know.
I don't know if you guys caught that.
Hell, but I'm going to get you better than the
This ain't going to be well. It's going to be top shelf.
That's some
and
good
it was,
insight.
I was like, ooh, is it Knob's Creek?
No.
It's not even that fancy. It's Maker's Mark. And then the cops got Jack Daniels. I was like, why do I know all these bottles? What does that say about me?
But you know,
this is crazy.
You've been around a bar. Also,
I'm an adult.
I love that he says, she says, there's nothing but trash and old money. He says, which are you? And she says, I'm trash from old money.
Love it.
But her family looked very much like old money. Like they were walking up on like.
But she seems, maybe that's what she thinks about herself, is that she's trashy.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because she's an alcoholic who drinks mm-hmm. in her car. I'm not laughing about that at all. That's not funny. It's just her character was just excessive. Yeah. And
the character is funny, though.
She's sassy.
In a way.
She's sassy.
Yeah. So she doesn't really want to write about this, but she does it anyways. We get she's a drinker, she's a smoker, her cell phone's cracked. I mean, she's a mess.
I mean, you know what I'm really rooting for Camille, though? She is one of the hottest women in this town, and, like, all the men just get better and better looking, from the bartender to the detective. Oh, my God, the detective.
Yes,
hello.
Yes, we are going to get to
the
detective,
like, look, I know that she's an alcoholic, but, like, have you seen her face? Can we get this girl a ship? I'm ready. Like, she's
you
in a small town.
Ready.
There is not a lot of men, and I'm like rooting for both of them.
Yeah, oh my God. I love it. Redheads. So, Camille. I can't call her Amy.
I
that's
know,
bad.
Right?
Clearly, she's a distinguishable name.
It makes you feel better. I kept writing Amy.
And I was like,
to
Amy,
go back and pass it out.
Camille. So Camille gets to her hometown and she meets the chief, which is he's stereotypical Southern chief.
Yes.
He doesn't seem very interested in having her there either. I mean, he explains it a little bit, but why do you guys think that he wants to keep kind of the reporting out of this case?
I think he doesn't want to deal with the fact that something could possibly go wrong in their town. And if he has any hunches on who it could possibly be, he's completely shut down to it because they're from their town.
Mm-hmm.
They do hogs. They're good standard.
<hogs.
laughs>
It's a town where everyone knows each other.
Yeah, they're good, upright people. And he is beside himself to think that anyone could do something that he wouldn't already be onto.
Yeah. And he,
so that's
and he says
part of the bigger problem.
We're known as the hog killers. We don't want to be known as the kid killers.
But
as
she's
well.
Definitely more welcome since she is part of, or she comes from the town
true.
Than the detective is.
Do you think he welcomed her more? I felt like he was very dismissive because she was
I
a
mean,
woman.
The town
like,
in
that
general.
That didn't matter.
you know,
because then we find out that from the town, totally
from she's her mother, more her name,
But the detective didn't. I almost felt as if he was more dismissive towards her, especially when you find out that he called in a detective from Kansas City.
Yeah, well, I mean, he called him in, I think, because he needed backup, but
he might be regretting it, but he still looked for it, and now that there's someone else here who could possibly help him, he's like, no, I won't have you bandy this about, which a big part of it, obviously, is that she's a news reporter, but another big part of it, which I felt was inferred, is because she is a woman, and this whole town still sees her as Adora's daughter.
Exactly.
She's almost like a little kid, always, for Adora's child. Like, that's it. That's who she is. Because she's not married. She doesn't have kids. She didn't stay there. So she's like her unruly child that ran away and is kind of back.
Yeah. So we're going to get more to Adora because Patricia Clarkson is phenomenal in this role. But we keep meeting a few characters throughout the town. So she goes to join the search party and there's a couple young girls that are sitting there. They're like, oh, the party, you know, the search party's that way. And they're, you know, I think, are they smoking weed? I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. I just thought they were smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. They seem just kind of like bored kids in a small town.
I mean, do they have weed
around
in a town that small? I just thought it was like cigarettes.
Yes. Well, they're doing something that, you know, isn't very ladylike. And then she runs into, Elizabeth Perkins' character, Jackie O'Neill, who's kind of the eccentric older woman.
I
thought I was like, she's going to be the comic relief of this season.
I can't wait to see more.
Yes. I was surprised how little she was in it, but you get the sense that she's friends with Adora, her mother, and she also just keeps talking about how pretty she is. Did you notice that? Everybody kept saying,
beauty, beauty,
Camille,
beauty.
You are beautiful, and you were the most beautiful girl in Wind Gap.
Yeah.
But isn't that like a proud thing in the southern town? Right. I was the prettiest girl in my town.
But she's not,
but she
proud,
is
of
not
it,
proud of it.
Which makes me wonder if she was violated when she was younger, and that's something they're going to touch on. Wow. As I give you the side eye, because you read the book.
Yes, and we do have a live chat going, so if you guys have any opinions for us, we would love to hear from you. Please comment. We have Heather on it right now.
Yes, I
want to
shout out Aaliyah Jordan, and she agrees with us. She says, if it was a man, I don't think he would have been like that, talking about Chief Vickery. So she also said that, yes, those were her eyelashes, because in the book, she does that.
Oh,
so we have some
thank you. Yes. And guys, this isn't the only after show we have. We obviously have a ton of after shows for anything you could possibly imagine, and Heather is going to tell us a little bit more about it.
Yes, guys. So our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows, from dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more. There's no network that works harder to serve the television fans, but we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels, preferably more. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and it'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. You can turn those off. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel and check out other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know that you did so, and we'll thank you on air. But for now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV talk.
Yes, thank you guys so much. And if you are listening on iTunes, please give us 5 stars, because as my other moderator says, is it 1 through 4 don't work. So thank you, Carrie Lane, for that lovely line. But yes, give us a 5. And then like us, give us that thumbs up, subscribe to us on YouTube. So let's get into the sexy man that Carolina cannot stop talking about.
Oh my, I need to like look him up on IMDb. Like, listen, last night I was Googling a Trippier from England, and tonight I'm going to be Googling hot detective from Sharp Object.
Hot
like,
detective.
I need to know, like, are men single? Where do they live? How old are they? I'm single.
No,
stalking. I have goals.
Well, Chris Messina is playing Detective Willis. He is an out-of-town detective from Kansas City who has come here per Chief Vickery. And so you instantly can tell there's going to be something going on between Camille's character and this detective.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very brief encounter when she's hanging out with Crazy Jackie. I'm just going to call her that.
Crazy Jackie.
And then we get to her coming back to her childhood home, which is when I think all of everything starts to make sense a little bit. We meet Adora, her mother, and her husband, Alan, which I love that her mom's like, Camille's here. And the husband goes, who?
Yeah.
It's so that right off the bat kind of tells us it's a little bit strange. So what did you guys think? What was your first impression of Adora?
I thought they were they were all very subdued. That whole scene, there was the piano music playing in the background. It was very, like, low energy, soft talking, like...
Were they all on something?
Visitors. That's what it... I mean, that's kind of what it seemed like. I've had
some Valium.
Something is in the
water.
All
day. Something is in the whiskey.
But it wasn't, at least in my personal experience, not a normal mother-daughter relationship.
No.
So that's very interesting. I think we're going to see a lot more of
that. Oh, a ton, so, I'm sure.
For me, what'd you think of? A big part of it was when she opened the door and was like, oh, I wish you had phoned. The house is not ready for visitors.
I was like, my own daughter.
I was like, this is her daughter. What type of a greeting is that? Yeah. That they're so formal and foreign with each other that you would even say that. And for me, I wrote down some notes. I said to myself, it's so weird her mother talks about visitors when she first sees her daughter. Also, the impression that she gave, especially when she tells her husband, Alan, Camille's here, and he goes, who? I was like, wow, she's a stranger in her own home.
Oh, yeah.
But more importantly, how cold and uncomfortable their greeting and interactions were.
Absolutely.
Made me write down that they make wasps from the Northeast and New England look like they are overly affectionate and warm. Wow.
Yeah.
Exclamation.
Well, obviously it's too much for Camille to handle because she's like racing out the door to go to a bar because that's her happy place. She runs into the barkeep.
Or maybe it's her escape. Like, is it her happy place? Well, I think it's like blur the just terrible crap that she's dealing
with. Yeah, you can just say she feels comfortable in a bar stool. Like,
yeah. And she knows she knows the bartender. They have a familial relationship.
So. And he owns it now. And this is the first we kind of hear the people in this town talk about gay people because he mentions, you know, like, oh, they sold the bar to me. And those types of people, they moved to California. You don't see those types around here. And I thought that was interesting that it's 2018 and this town has not gotten there yet.
We're just getting a bigger picture of what this town is actually like and their values.
Yes. Yeah. And then Hot Detective is there and they have a little lot exchange. Of
sexual tension.
There was.
But I was mad at him in that scene because like he was interrupting her from interrogating the kid.
John Keane.
Who is the girl, the dead girl, missing girl's like brother. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he kind of annoyed me in that scene. I was like, You're interrupting. Let her talk to the kid.
But I think he was doing that.
He did it on purpose.
On purpose because he feels that she's going to, I think he can already tell from her personality, she's going to meddle a little bit more than she should as a reporter. And she might get hurt in the process. I don't really know his motivations yet. I'm curious to see.
I think he's starting to get motivated romantically.
I hope so. That'll be awesome if we had that scene, which I'm sure is coming.
Oh, yeah.
So she gets a little too drunk at this bar and passes out in her car, which is so ladylike.
Yeah.
So when she wakes up and goes home, her mother, this is the big mother scene where her mom is basically like, how dare you embarrass me that way? And Heather, you were talking a lot about the lighting in this scene.
I just love the way this show is lit because obviously there's a lot of secrets in the show. And when the mother, when Adora is yelling at her and it's just this figure in the shadow, you can't even see her face. And for me, it really felt like Camille as a little girl, like watching her mother, you know, it's not an actual person. It's just this figure, this monster.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's like a figment of what she remembers.
And she's coming in and out of the light. I love the way it's shot. It's so beautiful.
What really got to me, too, is it was, even though it wasn't, like, through Camille's eyes, I almost felt that the way it was filmed made you feel like you were in a fly in the house in someone else's home while they were ranting.
Yes. Right.
And
almost like the housekeeper, because she was like,
want some eggs?
No,
want some
eggs? No. She was like, y'all ready for your eggs?
The husband was
She's so ready and like over it. Mm-hmm. But I almost felt like it reinforced Camille's point of view, the way that Jean decided to shoot this. And I loved it.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And Adora kept saying, like, you are not an adult. You are not a person. You are my daughter in this town, and you have to remember that.
Right.
And you can tell Adora feels something towards these girls that were murdered and are missing, and she says, I know them, and what do you think I'm going through? And it's almost like, how dare you come in here and write about this tragic thing that I'm going through. So it seems like everything is about her.
And she feels more connected to those missing girls than even to her own daughter.
Oh, absolutely. Interesting, though, because when she said that, I felt like she's not connected to the girls at all. I just felt that her level of drama. No, I felt like her level of drama is always about, oh, this affects me so much. I went to their christening. How dare they? How dare they be murdered? I knew them. She's not British by feeling.
I was like, did you go
British? She's not. No, I did. But I was saying it's like that idea of being so stuffy and like tight-knit. Mm-hmm. And like Americans generally, we think of like very like upper echelon, uber posh Brits being like, no, we have tea at 12 precisely. 12:01 is a crime. And it's almost like that really, like, tight-knit pre-Civil War kind of, like, antebellum-ish need for such structure and, like, everything that's out of line is detrimental to the, like, great families. Yes. And it's almost like her mother lives in this delusion of that.
Oh, she absolutely does. Yeah. And then her husband... Did she
really know those girls that well, or did she just know them? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Because they live in a small town. To me, I felt like she didn't really know them. She wasn't that close to them. I doubt this woman ever changed one of those kids' diapers.
Well, like, no, it's not just, like that. And then her husband says nothing, so... Right.
So she doesn't have, like, a leg to stand on in my head about being so attuned to these kids, like... murder, other than the fact that she's like, oh, I sat next to them in church 5 times.
Yeah, a couple times. Well, we move kind of out of that home, and we move into Ann Nash's home, who is the little girl who was murdered a few months ago. And Camille wants to talk to her father, who's played by Will Chase from Nashville, if anyone's a fan, as I am. And she kind of gets a little bit of the scoop on what happened to Ann. And she feels a little weird about the dad. Like, maybe he is a little cagey and weird and acting strange. So what did you guys think about his involvement possibly in his own daughter's murder?
At least for me, I actually didn't feel any, like, oddness coming from him. Yeah. I was like, he lost a child.
Let's give him a break.
He feels guilty. His wife feels guilty. Probably changed their relationship. They have 3 other kids to worry about. Young children, it looked like.
Yeah.
It looked like a chaotic household. So can you blame the guy for being that way? It doesn't mean he didn't do something, but I think, well...
I feel like he could almost feel in his interaction with Camille the fighting that has been going on behind closed doors, especially when his daughter opens the door. He's like, what'd I tell you about that door?
Ooh, you better
when
knock
it's closed, her. What do you do when that door is closed? I knock, Daddy. That's don't you do that again. And then he like sends her off in the anger, and it made me wonder, like, how many arguments has he had with his wife?
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure he's gotten stricter since that happened to his daughter. I mean, and then he mentions that she was not raped. She was just murdered. And so he thinks maybe the guy who did it was gay, which there you go again. This town is...
Yeah. But he doesn't say that. He says a very, like, horrible expletive.
Which really, I will not say.
No. Yeah. But it, like, really brings home how small-minded and so uneducated in, like... just current events that people seem to be, because this is more of a current-day think piece for this novel. It's chilling.
Yeah. No, it's so interesting.
Because it's real. There's a lot of small towns in the U.S. And, like, maybe you guys are watching us from one of them. I went to high school in one of them. I went to boarding school in Millbrook, New York. It's tiny. It's a horse town. Everybody is, like, big into equestrian sports there. And it's – everybody knows – everything.
Yeah, and she said the population was 2,000 in this town. If that gives you
and
any
that
indication.
And that hadn't changed in a long time.
Oh, no, not at all. And then, so she leaves there, and when she runs into these girls again in the, in like almost this kind of like central square, town square.
Can I say something though? Sorry, before we move on, I just thought of it. Is that she was on the phone with her editor, and she's telling him how she thinks that the wife left. I don't think the wife left because the whole town would have been talking about it. But I think maybe she has a drinking or like some other kind of problem now because of losing her daughter. Because in a way, as a mom, she was the one that said, fine. Go ride your bike the 10 blocks to go to your best friend's house in a town that nothing like this would ever possibly happen.
Well, yeah, she had no way of knowing. And maybe she'll come around later and maybe Camille will get to speak with her. But she'll have a different side.
For me, I thought, no, I think that their fighting is just so bad that I think she's like taken to substance abuse and she probably leaves for long stretches and then comes back. But if she had actually left, I feel like Camille would have known going into the house that she had left.
Well, she has been drinking, though, Camille. So I feel like maybe she's not as sharp. Sharp objects.
Yeah.
Maybe she's not as sharp.
I see what you did there.
And, you know,
but you don't think the gossip would have gotten to her?
I mean, she's only been there a day or so at that point.
And they already knew she was there within like 30 minutes.
Yeah, but we find out later why that is, which we'll talk about in just a second. So we go kind of this town to this town square where she runs into these young girls again, the ones that were smoking the cigarettes, along with Natalie Keene's brother, John Keene, who was in the bar. And then all of a sudden she hears a woman crying in this alley and then they find Natalie's body. And I couldn't tell how, I guess she must have been hung because that's how Ann Nash had died. They said she got hung by a clothes wire because when we go meet the detective again, Amy Adams, Camille, is saying you have a serial on your hands. Yeah. Kind of congratulations. This is the same murder suspect, basically the same way. So I think Natalie must have been hung because we couldn't really tell how she was killed.
What I was thinking, because the body was there, the body was exposed. I don't think that she died there.
She was placed there for sure. Yeah.
But I was really lost in like the detail of the bruising and lines on her body, like her legs. I was trying to figure out what had happened.
It looked traumatizing, and I'm sure we're going to find out. So I definitely want to dive into some of these flashbacks because they came so often throughout the show. Of this young girl with really short red hair, who we find out is Camille at a younger age. And she has a lot of scenes with another younger girl who, when we end up meeting Amma, is it Amma or Amma?
I think Amma.
Amma? I can't remember. I think it's...
Amma.
Live Amma. Chat, help us out. Amma. Is it Amma or Amma? Amma.
I need it phonetically spelled, please.
She's the daughter of Camille's mom and stepdad. And she turns out she is one of the girls that was smoking the cigarette that she had run into earlier, who didn't make it known, like, hi, I'm your half-sister that you've never met, basically, or you don't remember me, or I looked different. So when we meet her at the end, everything kind of starts to come together with these flashbacks because, is it Amma or Amma? Because Amma says something like, do you ever...
I think it's Amma.
Amma. Do you think about Marion?
Like Emma, but Amma.
Yeah. Do you think about Marion? And do you, you know, I feel like even though I didn't meet her, that I still miss her. And we're kind of like, who is Marion? And then it all starts to make sense.
Yeah.
Because we get these flashes of a funeral of a young girl that we have seen and scenes with young Camille.
The seizure.
Their little kind of sisterly bond talks that have been throughout the show. So obviously something traumatic happened to Camille's sister. What do you guys think happened to her?
Amma.
Thank you, Aaliyah Jordan.
So for her and Amma's relationship, okay, this is so morbid, but I'm going to bring it to like that scene in the woods with the like pornographic like images taped up to the wall and then the strips of flesh. It gave me like such creepy Hannibal Lecter vibes that if Anthony Hopkins had popped in, I would have been like,
oh, no, that surprise makes sense.
I was waiting for someone to just like come and grab her.
And that was young Camille that that found that, by the way.
Yes, but so like moving on from that, she almost felt so uncomfortable when her editor asked her to do this, and because we had been seeing all the flashbacks with her sister, who's disappeared, in my head I immediately thought something truly awful happened to her sister.
Absolutely.
It made me wonder, like, either her sister was like violated in some kind of way, or the seizures were brought on because of something that this person in this like hut had done to her sister, and perhaps even to Camille. And we'll find that out later. If you've read the book, don't spoil it for me.
No, but these spoilers, are
please. That's right what now.
Because
sure.
It was so violent.
No spoilers.
Why would you show me that in the first episode within the first 15 minutes if it wasn't super important? And to me, I think that her family, for the sake of their good old money name, is covering up what 100%. Truly happened to her sister, and they brushed it off as an illness or something else. And this serial killer, maybe it's not someone new, but it's an old killer that is resurfacing because they still haven't had their attention paid to them.
I wonder that too. I wonder if it's all going to end up connecting itself. But yeah, we do see a lot of young Camille. We see that she, older Camille, is still thinking about her younger self as she goes, obviously, through this town that she used to live in. Its little memories are just
seamless transitions.
Oh, so good. Yeah. It's like young Camille, and then all of a sudden she goes through a door.
Shout out to the editor for this like editing job, because it is flawless.
It is really good. My husband's an editor, so he will appreciate it. Any shout-outs to the editor.
I was thinking that the whole time. I was like, this is, like, Emmy-worthy, Golden Globe-worthy editing.
Oh, you know it will be. It will be all over the Emmys. It will be all over the Emmys.
It better be.
For sure. So I want to close with the last scene of the episode, which was pretty powerful. Mm. We see Amy Adams get into this bath, which she's taken a lot of baths in this episode, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And there is a razor on the shelf and her drink, and she gets in and, like, so slyly puts her arm behind her head, and you see just the light hit. The word vanish is etched in her arm as if she put it there with razor blades. So what?
I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You guys, I need to go back and watch this. That just gave me more chills.
That's the name of the episode. Right?
That's the name of the episode. So she didn't notice that.
You have an eagle eye, my friend.
Oh. It was so quick. It was they show it to us and take it away.
They do. It's like they show the razor, they show her getting it, and then it was like, boom, her arm, and we're out.
But, I mean, it wasn't just that. They were all over her body. You could see
I didn't notice that.
All the words it gave over her body.
See, I was so busy thinking about the bigger visual of the picture that in film, a lot of times when you see a big character like this get into a bathtub with, you know, substances, it leads to suicide. So I was thinking, I was looking at the lighting and I was looking at the
you gotta watch it again.
Oh my goodness. No, I'm going to now. I need to see this.
That's one thing about reading the book.
Good thing I have HBO.
I'm looking for these little things, these little consistencies.
Yeah.
I need to read this book. I'm like so, I have anxiety for it now.
I feel like I can't. It's like, I feel like the show is gonna be great.
You can only read like 25 pages at a time.
Yes.
Okay, I'll do that.
So, final thoughts on this episode, not predictions yet, but final quick thoughts before we get into some awesome special segments. What do you think, Heather?
I'm speechless.
Anything else you wanted to mention that stuck out to you? Did we cover it all?
Yeah.
Carolina, anything?
Yes, just the characters. I'm so interested in the world building, and I can't wait to speak more about Emma, because she was such a powerful character. This girl is literally living dual lives.
Yes, her we should touch on that quickly, because
she's the mother's doll.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was dressed and very conservatively.
She resents it, man. Yeah. She resents it so much. And she brought up, she's like, I love my dollhouse, mother. I sold their clothes.
And she's like 14 or something.
You said you were going to go something. I was like, I wrote that in like all capitals. Like, how old is this child? Wait. This child, how old is she?
Do you know how old she's supposed to be, Heather?
She's so devious.
Emma?
I don't
know. How old is Emma supposed to be?
I did want to say one of the lines that stuck out to me that Emma said was, you're incorrigible to Camille. And she goes, and I am too. My mother just doesn't know it.
Yeah.
As if, like, she found, like, the middle ground where she could play Marion to her mother, but then be Camille in her real life.
Yeah, because Marion, she mentions, you know, Camille's younger sister who died. How perfect was she? And Camille says she wasn't, but she was very close. So clearly there's a lot going on between the sister who died and then Emma trying to kind of replace her. But in reality, she's roller skating around town in short shorts, smoking cigarettes.
Right.
And I don't know how she's getting away with that if everybody knows who she is in town. So I'm really curious on how that's going
to
play
again,
out.
Again, it's to like her mother's granddaughter where she's like, I knew those children. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
She's obviously
you
totally
You clearly don't
disconnected.
Know your own children.
You don't even know what your own kid is doing as she's like crawling out the window at 12 p.m. And you're like, she's making doll clothes. It's lovely. No, she's not.
Carolina is convinced that she's British, I think. Patricia Clarkson.
Sorry, I have to.
All right, guys. Well,
it's because I think of her as like so wound tight that it like comes out like, naturally.
Yeah. And her name's Adora. I mean, come on, it's so Adora. Southern. I love it. Okay, well, we're going to get into our special segment called The Feminist Chronicles with the lovely Carolina, where we highlight a female journalist who's done something awesome in the past or present.
Awesome. So for those of you who are joining us on YouTube, you should be able to see a magnificent photo of Anne Royal. Hmm. So Anne Royal is an incredible journalist. She's actually considered the first female journalist in the United States of America. You know, she traveled all over the world, so much so that she began her career in writing by publishing travel logs. like travel guides for people. She published
long ago. That's great.
The original blogger.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Lifestyle blogger.
Yes.
She was like, this is lit. Check it out. I highly doubt that was in any of them. But she published 10 volumes of travel books, one novel, and two newspapers when she settled in 1831 in the Washington, D.C. area. And fun fact, that house that she lived in is now part of what is the present Library of Congress.
Oh, that's
so obviously
cool.
It was torn down and now we have the Library of Congress, but at one point...
Yeah,
that was her home.
Imagine how significant that is
for
a woman in 1813. Is that what you said? Incredible.
1831. But her career spanned 30 years, which is something which is remarkable today.
Yes.
In 2018.
People didn't live that long back then.
No, she lived for quite a long time. She was born in the late 1700s. And
good
so, yes. But here's the thing that really gets to me. So she was a prolific journalist and all this. So she lived at the time in this northeast area of Washington, D.C., now Library of Congress, going back to, there was a Presbyterian church there, and they did not agree with how she practiced working. So they would constantly try to convict her to, or convince her, sorry, to become a member of their church. And she openly criticized them in one of her newspapers. And do you know what happened, ladies and gentlemen?
What?
Congressman John Coyle took her to court and tried her in a civic court where she was jailed in June 31st of 1829 under an antiquated law as a common scold. And I say that with quotation marks.
That's so old
school. It is a woman who publicly argues with neighbors. Like, that was a punishable offense.
Wow.
Which is wild to me. And the thing that terrifies me is that that was in the 1800s. And we're in 2018 and we're still seeing this today. Mm-hmm. How have our congressmen come so far for damning females with the point of view? And I feel like
Camille would have
words to say about this.
Absolutely.
So much and yet so little progress. And you know what? Shout out to Anne Royal, man.
Go, Anne Royal.
News.
And do we have any fan shout-outs we want to do real quick before we get into some predictions?
I mean, Aaliyah Jordan, you are all over that live chat.
Yes,
thank you so much, Aaliyah, for joining us. And everybody else who is watching, make sure you come into our live chat. We will give you shout-outs. Watch us next week and every week after.
Chat with us.
And yes,
we love having
you. I am on here chatting with you guys.
We are. We love having you guys. Thank you so much for joining. Mm-hmm. I know Amy Adams has some projects coming up. Let's just talk about one quick one, and then we're going to get to some predictions.
Yes.
So what's she got coming up?
Here's a big deal if you don't know it. Amy Adams is actually one of the executive producers on Sharp Objects that we're all watching, and she actually has her own production company called Fourth Born, and she has three upcoming projects under her production company. I don't know what they are, but if they're TV, I am hoping that HBO picks them up, because so far I'm blown away by the pilot. I can't wait to see. And in bigger casting news, your favorite Disney princess Giselle is set to make a comeback in Disenchanted, which is the official title of Enchanted 2.
I love it. I love when she's like, ooh, I'm mad. That's my favorite part of Enchanted. We love you, Amy Adams.
And all the rats come. And she's like, ooh, what are these?
All right, guys, let's get into some predictions for next week. We have to have this.
That was me. I got
all right.
excited.
Heather, quickly, what would you like to say?
I think that Emma and Camille are going to go at it.
Oh,
there is that underlying tension. They're all sweet right now, but that sisterly bond might not come through.
Yes, I agree. Carolina?
They're definitely drinking more whiskey. I think that things are going to come to a head between her and the officers working on this case.
Absolutely.
Because the detective alluded to the police chief not really researching it.
Yeah. No,
so
he definitely did.
I think things are going to be like in a head, like pa, pa, pa. People have things to say.
Yeah. And I also think we're going to learn a lot more about Marion and what happened to her.
Yes.
And so I really can't wait for that to be unveiled, I guess, so to speak. But I just
unraveled.
Revealed.
I think a whole lot more drinking and, unfortunately, self-harm is going to be done to Camille's character. And I think we're going to find out a little bit more on why she does that. I cannot thank you ladies for enough for being here, and to those in the live chat and everybody listening, please do not forget to subscribe, rate, comment, like, do all those things for us here at the Sharp Objects After Show. And before we go, ladies, where can we find you on social media?
Yes, you guys can find me at 500 Days of Heather.
Hey guys, if you're on Twitter, you can catch me at Carolina Benetti, and on Instagram at LenaBean113.
And you can find me on Instagram at LMPowers15 and on Twitter at LeslyPowers15. That's our show, everybody. Please join us next week for the Sharp Objects After Show. Thank you so much for joining. See ya!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.